Get an extra-large two-topping pizza
wow!
for only $11.99.
Oh.
That's an extra-large two-topping pizza
wow!
for only $11.99.
Oh.
So remember, get
wow!
for only at Pizza Pizza.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack.
I am sensing a general lack of vision. One of you is the least attractive person I've ever seen. I'm not going to say who.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me. Stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy. Yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted the fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh, well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. Wanting my cake and eat it too. Wanting it both ways. Fame made me a balloon.
Well, good morning. Happy Thursday. Lead off, Ashley, Ziggy, Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Got to get, like, the crowd cheer going. Shout out to Toronto FC.
Oh.
I start local.
Yeah, no, I know. That's really responsible and professional of you. I thought you were going to say shout out to me.
Well, you are local. I probably should have thought about that first.
Congratulations to the Reds.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Ashley Docking, who... as of today, no longer needs to tape her ankles for jumping onto and off of and onto and off of the Washington Nationals bandwagon.
How dare you? Once I stake claim in this team after the wild card, I was all in. There was no waffling.
I didn't hear much to the World Series. Yeah, I'm with you.
Run it back. Run back every show. This is what we're doing today. We're running every show back since the Nats won the wild card. We'll run it at 2.5 just so we can kind of get through the... you know, the tough to listen parts.
Okay. Mon, lots of editing for the next.
Anyway, yeah, it was a great night last night. I'm very excited. Bryce Harper, are you okay?
You know what?
Are you good?
$330 million. I don't know how you feel about that. It's really weird with the Pistons in town playing the Raptors.
Yeah.
And just how my brain works or doesn't, as the case may be. But I'm thinking Casey watching the Raptors win the championship at the owner's house in Malibu last June. Where was Bryce Harper last night watching Game 7 of the World Series? And would he be watching?
We'll find out soon enough. And I think he would be watching just based on general human curiosity. How could you not? And I know that everyone's going to say he got paid a truckload of money, so it eases the pain a little bit. And you know what? Probably. But guess what? No matter what age we are, you know what humans hate to be? Left out. Feeling like they're not needed. And that's probably a few of the emotions.
Help the middle-aged guy out here. FOMO?
Yeah. Fear of missing out a little bit, I think. That's a fair analysis.
I was traded from the 05 Hurricanes and 05-06 during the year they went to the Cup Finals. God. And you do keep an eye on what they're doing, obviously.
So do you remember where you were for Game 7 Hurricanes Oilers?
Yes, I was out with friends, and it was on in the bar, and I pretended like we were kind of watching. We weren't watching. I was obviously eyeing the TV down. It wasn't a big deal at the bar I was at. It was on TV, but it wasn't on audio.
Are you in Toronto or are you somewhere else?
I'm in Toronto. Yeah, I'm in Toronto watching that.
Okay. How are you feeling? Because you've got friends on the team.
Yep.
You got probably a lot of buddies on the team. So you're, I would suppose, pulling for them. But then at the same time, you're like, I'm not there.
Well, it could be you, right? You could be in the lineup. Yeah, and it's one of those things where I don't want to say... you're not jealous, but you want to be there, right? it's just like I was there for half the year,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in some bar out of shape, eating peanuts,
eating kale salad, and drinking organic beer.
This was before all that. This is some wings,
ordering
a round of shots for the bar, and then just so to confirm, Bryce Harper definitely was watching. He tweeted out after Game 6 when David Martinez was ejected, he tweeted out, next at Rough and Rowdy for Barstool, Davey versus the umpires in this series. And then it's a gif of The Rock with his hand out being like, come here, guys. So he's definitely paying attention whether or not he's hurting about it. Listen, I'm sure there's going to be a feature about it in the offseason, which thank you, baseball, because it'll keep things interesting. Keep it on the radar.
You think Bryce Harper, you think he's liked with the team?
No, I don't get that sense. I mean, I don't get the sense that he is despised, but he was, and I don't know the situation in Philadelphia. You go into a new clubhouse and you acclimate, but in Washington, that was his clubhouse. And I think his mood on any given day set the mood for the entire experience. And so to extract that, does Washington win because Bryce Harper is gone? I don't know if that's a fair straight line conclusion to draw. This team was 12 games under 500. I mean, God, that was browbeaten into us. They were 19-31. I'm never going to forget their 50 game record for the rest of my life because we got told about it through the stretch drive in August and September, and now all through the playoffs. They were 12 games under 500 the final week of May. Well, and they turned it right around.
Only one team, right? 2005 Astros?
Who got up.
Well, the worst record. But they didn't win.
They didn't win. They got there. Lost to the Chicago White Sox. But that Nationals team was clearly struggling without Harper through the first third or so of the season. Davey Martinez, shout out to a former Expo and former Blue Jays player who just skipped that team, that franchise, to its first World Series championship. Davey Martinez was on the hot seat.
He was in the hospital.
Well, that was later.
He was this season.
They were talking about, because he left the Cubs where he was Joe Maddon's bench coach after 2017. So he had his first full year as manager last year. And by May, so the second month of his second season on the job, they were talking about the possibility that if this didn't turn around quickly, he was getting run.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a lot of teams, though. A lot of different sports. I mean, look at, I don't like to keep going back to hockey, but what happened in St. Louis. Look what happened in Pittsburgh when I won 08. It's guys, they were getting fired halfway through the season. A new coach comes in, and I know that's not the situation here, but it's just so easy. The first thing you think of is, okay, let's get rid of the coach. This is not our team. This is not what we want. The record's brutal, and let's change this up. But yeah, I love the fact they stuck with him, and I mean, look what they have now.
Man, what a bunch of fighters. You hate to see it, don't you? Right? They survived 5 elimination games in the month of October, you guys. They beat the likes of Josh Hader. They beat the likes of Clayton Kershaw. They beat the likes of Mr. Gerrit Cole, Justin Verlander, 106 win Dodgers team, 107 win Astros team with the oldest roster in baseball, by the way. Non-analytics people are loving this than anything. The Howie Kendrick home run that barely squeaked over, hit the foul pole to make sure that, you know, the Nats were going to be taking this one home. It's a beautiful thing.
And how about the final pitch of the World Series being thrown by a former Blue Jays reliever and having it not be the guy who pitches for Houston.
Right.
And having the guy who pitches for Houston, Roberto Osuna, get touched up a little bit as part of Washington's rally.
Yeah.
But you look at last night, each of these big games are tied back to Toronto FC. And isn't it always the case in elimination games? There are moments. The moment that stands out for me, the Kendrick home run is obviously a big deal. You go back to the bottom of the second inning. Houston had put a run up on Max Scherzer. Two out, bases loaded. That sinking line drive to left field. Juan Soto takes this is how you have to read that, because it's coming at you like a frozen rope. And if you take a step in and you misread it and it goes over your head, two outs, runners leaving on contact, bases cleared, 4-0. He takes a first step back. That thing is sinking in front of him. Dives, makes the catch at turf level.
The opportunity to dislocate all four of your fingers at once.
And it, but that it's a 1-0.
Yeah,
it's a 1-0 game. You escape the damage.
His face in slow motion.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Whoops.
Yeah, he's just like eyes open, mouth open. Like, I mean, I wanted to go to the replay. I didn't even know if he got it. It was close.
Yeah, I mean, it looked live like he had it, and then it was very clear he got the glove underneath. But
I was worried. You watch this game, and you watch Greinke just dealing. And here's the thing. Even though it was only 1-0 for a little while there for the Houston Astros, all the Astros players making contact, balls in play, playing small ball, and you're like, oh man, this is building into some kind of crescendo that's just going to explode all over the Nationals. And then couple that with the fact that everything Washington was hitting was just like a little pff, duh. At one point, Greinke had 4 assists by like the 3rd inning or something like that, because as we know, he's a Gold Glove winner. He's a great defensive pitcher. And the Nats did not get a 4th batter up in any inning until the 5th. And the reason they got 4th was because Howie Kendrick was walked on a full count pitch. Then the next inning, 3 up, 3 down. And you're like, oh man, this is not even going to be fun. It's not even going to be an extended game. It's just going to be the Astros coming, doing their business and leaving.
Well, you talk about tweets that didn't age well, although I will defend my tweet. It was in the 6th or 7th inning where I said, Zach Greinke, like, everybody needs moments, right? So an outing like this, and I was speaking at the time, presuming that the Astros were going to win the baseball game, but that even if they didn't, it wouldn't be because Greinke coughed it up. And sure enough, I mean, he gives up the home run to Anthony Rendon in the top of the 7th to cut the 2-0 lead for Houston to 2-1. Yep. And then walks Soto.
No, he gave up a single, I believe.
Okay.
And then he's yanked.
So Soto reaches, and then it's Will Harris in relief, tying runner on first base.
Home run.
And Howie Kendrick comes up, and we've been talking about juiced baseballs in the regular season and different baseballs, less juiced baseballs in the postseason. And Howie Kendrick, the veteran, doinks one off the opposite field foul pole for a 2-run home run. And that's, I was like, okay, I'm with Ashley now. This is a team of destiny. There's no question about it.
It's easy to look back, but do you pull Greinke when he gets pulled? I know it's easy to look and say, sit here right now and say, how could you pull him? But just one base hit, one walk, one base hit?
Well, two home runs up to that point, plus the hit after the home run. So you're thinking, okay, he's already gone further than he has all month, I believe it was. And you know what? AJ Hinch said the right thing. And I don't even think it's just lip service. It's, I'd rather pull him early than late. And those are the calculated risks that you have to be able to deal with at the end of the day. Would I have kept him in? Would you have kept him in, Scotty? Who's to say? And then again, they have so many analytics on like Greinke versus the next 6 batters up in the order. They know what he's like against righties versus lefties in late game situations. They have all this information. So that was what we were talking yesterday about, is how aggressive are these managers going to be? Are they going to stick to their stats or stick to their gut? And are you going to regret those decisions later? Because I was thinking the same thing when Scherzer was in. I was thinking the same thing when Greinke was in. I'm like, how long are these guys going to go? And how unrealistic is it to assume that Greinke goes the distance before the second home run by Howie Kendrick? That's something you would love to see, but in this day and age in baseball, it's a really, really risky choice to leave your pitcher in the 3rd time through the order.
I think the decision is made in advance. So when the Rendon home run leaves the yard, it's a 2-1 game.
Mm-hmm.
They can do no worse than tie the game for the remainder of the inning as long as nobody else is on base. The moment somebody reaches and the guy in the batter's box becomes the go-ahead run, that's when you make the move. And they would have that all mapped out. They would have that all drawn up. And in the day and age in which we live, if AJ Hinch leaves Greinke in the 7th inning and he coughs it up, pitching out of the stretch with runners on base 3rd time through the order, people, maybe not us, but people around the game, inside the game, are all over AJ Hinch for that. So I don't have a problem with the move. At some point, it becomes about player performance. And Will Harris just didn't get the job done. And then Roberto Osuna didn't get the job done. And another former Blue Jay, Joe Smith, coughed up a couple of insurance runs in the top of the ninth inning. And Washington sailed at that point. And Davey Martinez, starter. Scherzer went five. Okay. Patrick Corbin, boom. Mm-hmm. And that's what if you're going to bring starting pitchers in relief in the playoffs, I always think it's better to have them start innings.
Fresh.
Don't have them because it allows them to mimic their routine in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. And they're not coming in with a runner on or two runners on and pitching out of the stretch. That's what Joe Maddon did to John Lester 3 years ago in Game 7. He replaced Kyle Hendricks with Lester, but Lester had been up two or three times. If they didn't get him into the game at that point, they were going to have to shut Lester down. And I think he gave up a couple runs and then settled down. So these are tough decisions because it's you're not skipping that game the way that you skip any one of the 162 games you play in the regular season. So
the pressure, now, the stage.
Now, speaking of moments.
Yes.
How about Quentin Westberg? So Atlanta United scores in the fourth minute. Should I say nil or is that tacky?
No, it's nil. That's literally what it is.
Like, do it.
Okay. Love.
No, that's tennis.
That's tennis.
I know.
Tennis anyone?
Don't worry about it.
Was that also your British accent? Was that also your British accent? Like, love.
Love. Like, what?
Would you just call me?
Ziggy, there's a cliff. There's a cliff. Straight ahead. Give Ashley the wheel.
It's confidence in my co-host. Oh, yeah, right.
What
sport is that?
That road sign where the arrow weaves a little bit. Yeah. Just.
Dude. The accent threw me off. That's why.
Yeah.
Okay, so
really back to Quentin Westberg.
Back to nil.
So it was one love.
This went from love to 100 real quick is what this did.
Could go to hate if we don't get it back on track. So it's 1-0. 11th minute, Michael Bradley takes a penalty in the box. Joseph Martinez has the penalty kick. If Westberg doesn't make that save, 2-0, like that... 2-0 in soccer, Atlanta with 70,000+ fans just raining down on Toronto FC. That is the match right there.
Yeah, it's over.
And he makes the save.
I mean, did you think he was going to stop it?
Well, I don't think a goalkeeper is ever going to stop a penalty kick.
And they're not expected to.
Right.
They're not expected to. If you think about it in this terms of like PKs and actual penalty kicks,
it's a 5-on-1.
The goaltenders are expected to, if you stop one, your team should win because no one's expecting the other goaltender to even stop one. So those are generally speaking
like
the
I
rules.
Find,
so a one-off situation, absolutely not.
Like I find it's totally different than hockey where I get angry at Freddie in a shootout if he doesn't make a save.
Yeah, they're not even close to the same
which
thing.
Which isn't necessarily fair to Freddie, but I get a little pissed off.
But I still feel like they're not necessarily expected to. Like maybe more than one.
Percentage-wise, though.
Yes, but it's still a massive advantage for the offensive player.
Right.
It's a 5-on-3 in hockey. You should score.
Yeah.
You should score.
1,000%.
Yeah. But the percentages suggest that you're unlikely to.
In what?
Right, like, isn't it better than 50% that goaltenders make the saves in shootouts? Or am I on drugs here?
I'm just saying 5-on-3 in hockey is the same as a shootout in soccer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, he makes that save. And that's a pure guess, right? So it's a pure guess, although it's probably a slightly informed guess in that you have the scouting report.
Oh, yes.
On players' tendencies mm-hmm. in penalty kicks. Well, and then you're just hoping that they play to their strengths or fall back on their habits.
It's a guess. He's guessing one way or the other. I don't think you can look at a guy, what he does in his past. I don't think he's looking up a scouting report and saying, hey, this guy goes left or right.
Well, it's like Pozuelo last week.
Well, I love that right
but
in the middle.
But he had done that before, though. that's not something that's against his character, Pozuelo being cheeky and shipping something right up the middle. So it's maybe not as big of a sample size in terms of a scouting report. It's not going to be as though a batter is looking at a pitcher and his tendencies or vice versa. It's still definitely someone that you know what they did, you know their history in these moments, and you use that to make your, it's an educated guess.
But if you know a guy like is going to go right straight on the net, do you, if you're a goaltender, do you just sit in your net if you're a keeper?
Well, because you
can if you know that they tend to do that, or if you have a history with them, because sometimes goaltenders and offensive players, or even defenders, I guess, they'll have faced each other before, because generally speaking, a team has two or three guys that they go to all the time for PKs if they're able to make the selection.
Is there, and I mean, I think we're pretty forgiving of keepers, but is there a position in sports where you stand to look dumber than a keeper in penalty kicks in soccer, where you're diving to the right as the kick goes into the left corner, or as Pozuelo just kind of toys with you and kicks it right into the center of the net? I'm thinking if you're standing there and somebody just buries it bottom left, bottom right, top left, top right, and you're just standing there like a mannequin and you hardly move.
And then the guy just buries one in the corner, and you're like, "What? This guy not even trying?
And what am I supposed to do?"
Yeah, I mean, didn't they stop the tenders a while back? Remember when they used to come out a lot? They'd go side to side, and they'd come out 5 feet. I feel like that has been shut down.
Yeah, you have to stay on your line. Right to left. You can't move north and south. You can't come forward. I mean, it's not necessarily. It's kind of like Trey Turner getting called out at first for interfering with the ball because he was like 4 inches inside the line as opposed to outside the line. I don't necessarily think they're going to penalize goalkeepers if they take 1 inch off the line. But yes, you're not able to run towards, because it helps with your angles, right?
I don't want to keep bringing this up, but I'm surprised how many of the former players said Turner did interfere yesterday when I was watching some of the broadcasts.
Did or did not?
They believed.
Not. Yeah. No, it was totally pedantic, the fact that, you know, I was saying, look, if you want to be a complete and total pedant, you can make the argument that the call was right, but the spirit of the rule was abused on that call. And, I mean, it doesn't end up mattering now because Washington wins the World Series. Quick shout-out to Pascal Siakam, 30 points, 19 in the third quarter. Dwayne's not salty, though, Ashley.
He's salty. I think he is salt. And I love when anybody comes out.
But he's classy, too. Like, he's not going to be that guy, at least overtly.
But both, as I said yesterday to Grange when he was here, both things can be true. Yeah. It's a seriously emotional situation. It's your job. And it's not your job like some of us go to work and we're like, well, hopefully it's payday, right? Okay, can't wait to go to drinks after work. It's his job in the sense that he lives and breathes it and has for decades. So, yes, it's something that he feels like he built. And then they won without him. It sucks. It's like planning a trip for your friends. And all of a sudden you can't go, and you see them posting pictures the whole time. Like, oh my God, look how much fun we're having in Cabo.
And Ashley's lying in bed with strep throat.
Yeah, you're like, damn, the sty in my eye really is infected.
I could see Casey sitting there with a bucket of chips and be like, watching them in the playoffs, like, yeah, that was my play. Yeah, that's my defensive system. Oh no, I set that one up. I drew that one up. I could just see him sitting there with his everything. Yeah.
Flavor chips.
And dip.
Chips with the dip.
There's a part of that story that Ashley just told, unrelated to the vacation, that is true. Poor you on this Thursday morning. Dark Side of the Mon. Ryan Mon is our technical producer. He's told us some weird stories about his life on the air. Today is Halloween. And Ryan has an annual pilgrimage that he makes with a picnic basket over the noon hour that he's going to tell us about at about 6:48. You don't want to miss this. Hugh Burrell, speaking of things you don't and people you don't want to miss, Hugh Burrell jumps in with the six-pack next.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now let's crack open the six-pack. The top stories we're talking about this morning. One.
Home field advantage? Not bloody likely. to Michael Brantley. Hudson sets the kick, and here it comes. Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! Swing and a miss! And a World Series Game 7 winning Curly W is in the books! The celebration is on! The Washington Nationals are the world champions!
Congratulations, Expos. I mean Nationals. They beat Houston 6-2 to win the World Series 4-3. The road team winning every game in this series. That's the first time that's ever happened across any of the major North American sports in a seven-game series. Houston was 60-21 at home. So how impressive is this victory? They won four times at Minute Maid Park.
Well, it's hugely impressive, and Ashley laid it all out. I mean, the way that they came back late in the wild card game, the way that they upset the Los Angeles Dodgers, a 100-plus win team, the way that they took care of business with an inferior Cardinals team that didn't waste any time, the fact that the layoff of about a week didn't affect them. Houston was the clear favorite, clearly the better team on paper. Washington got it done. This is a great, great run that I think will be talked about for a long time.
Yeah, usually you have to do something that is a little bit crazy, a little bit something you're not used to. In this situation with them, it's knocking off the team with one of the best home records in, what, two decades? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love to see this. This is awesome.
Ryan Zimmerman, guy you always think about, veteran, been there since RFK Stadium. Huge for him.
It's interesting that you say that, because Washington is the oldest team in the major leagues. In the days of analytics and everything's going younger, this is the oldest team, the grizzled vets.
You would be
this
happy
one.
About that.
That's
part,
right.
Wouldn't you?
And one for the old guys.
Two.
Hey, Toronto FC is going to the championship game.
De Leon, Bullock's trying to get himself back onside. Wrestle able to turn De Leon around. Now De Leon, letting fly, scores! Nick De Leon, magic in the playoffs! And Toronto have come from behind to take the lead!
My goodness, what a goal. From well outside the box, Nick De Leon's 2-1 goal in the 78th minute stood up as the winner, and for the third time in 4 years, Toronto FC will play the Seattle Sounders in the MLS Cup November 10th in Seattle. I'm not betting against TFC. The role that they're on?
It's exceptional that this rivalry, even if there has been turnover in terms of the lineups and the stars, is still alive and well. I'll be tuning in for this. And you're right, Hugh, you can't count them out. A team that was playing from behind from jump in the fourth minute, Atlanta scores the first goal. Then they withstand a PK. And
what a save.
And they're
by
able
Quentin
to get
Westbrook,
past that. Yeah. Yeah, we talk about moments. That was one
and
of them.
And they did it without Jozy Altidore as well. So he'll have another week, a little more than a week, to get some rest. And hopefully he's back for the final.
Well, Drew Carey is one of the minority owners of the Seattle Sounders. And I always have thought about the famous Adam Sandler, Bob Barker line in Happy Gilmore. The price is wrong.
That's right.
Hopefully that's the attitude Toronto FC takes into a week Sunday.
Three.
Hey, the Raptors did something last night they weren't able to do all of last year. Beat Dwayne Casey's Pistons. 125-113 wraps the final. They moved to 4-1. Pascal Siakam, a game-high 30. Before the game, the former Raptors coach wanted to clear the air.
Irks me when I read the narrative that Dwayne is salty. I can't say anything right. Everything I say, I say, okay, we got better every year, or he's salty. Or I say that we developed those guys, or he's salty. No, Dwayne Casey is not salty at all. I'm happy for everybody who's here. So there's no animosity in my heart whatsoever. I can live, I can sleep at night.
Ziggy, you don't believe him. You think he's salty.
He is 100% salty. When you say stuff like that, we developed the guys. I was part of this. Hey, I'm saying he's salty, but I'm not upset that he's salty. He has every right to be. His imprint is on this team. They run a lot of the plays that they ran when he was here. Nick Nurse does a lot of things that he learned from him. So how can you not be salty?
Well, Ashley, you mentioned it earlier in the show. Michael Grange said it can be both. He can be salty and happy.
I said it can be
that.
Both.
I thought you were paraphrasing Michael Grange.
Michael Grange gets enough credit around these parts, okay?
You're right. How dare I? Overstep my bounds.
Listen, the things that he's saying, they're just full facts. He did have a hand in developing this team. They did get better and better. They came from a 23-win team to having banners up in the rafters under Dwayne Casey. He couldn't take them home down the stretch. It took a miraculous big time move by Masai Ujiri, a firing and a trade to make it happen. Hey, both things can be true. Michael
Green. Dial it back way back to 13. They traded Rudy Gay with the intention of then trading Kyle Lowry. I mean, where does this go if the Gay trade doesn't happen, or if they don't start winning right after
and
the trade
Kyle
is made?
Kyle goes to the Knicks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Four.
Well, things got more than a little salty in Philadelphia last night when the Sixers' Joel Embiid and the T-Wolves' Karl Anthony Towns got into a dust-up in the third quarter. The big men hit each other, then hit the floor. Both were ejected. Towns' mom gave Embiid the finger as he was being led off the floor. Sixers won the game to go to 4-0. Post-game, Embiid wasn't exactly apologetic.
That's what the city of Philadelphia is about. You got to come in here. You got to fight. You know, you got to play hard. You got to be gritty. You got to be a Broad Street bully. So that's what it's about. So we're going to keep on, you know, fighting and, you know, trying to accomplish the goal we have set for us.
And because this is 2019, both traded insults on social media after the game. Now, Ziggy, he gave a shout-out there to the Broad Street Bullies. So the fans of Philadelphia, this city and its fans is unlike any other city in North America.
None. And I think it's the only one where fans have jumped into the penalty box to fight players on the other team. And I believe it was Ty Domi where they jumped in. So, yeah, I mean, we've seen it. It's not just hockey and basketball. How about baseball with the burning building with the fan giving a hard time?
The indelible image I have of Philadelphia fans is while Michael Irvin is being led off the field, strapped to a stretcher.
Broken neck.
Because he has a broken neck. It's the end of his career. Fans are throwing batteries at him. So yeah, Philly, tough place to play. Just tough in general.
Go ahead.
How about the hero that ate horse manure during the Super Bowl parade? And
I was excited. I was happy that my team won.
How about a little E. coli for dinner?
How about Joel Embiid saying he's not the same guy he was last year?
I'm a changed man. I'm not doing all of that this year. I changed.
It's been 10 days since that quote. That's all I'm going to say.
It's been a good 10 days.
Oh, my goodness.
Five.
All right. Is it too early to say the Warriors season is over? What happened last night in the third quarter against the Suns? Phoenix's Aaron Baines fell on Steph Curry, who suffered a broken hand. The Warriors lost 121-110 post-game. Warriors coach Steve Kerr was more concerned with the bigger picture.
Obviously, it's been a tough start for us on many levels, so we're just trying to find our footing. Obviously, this puts us in a tough spot, so we'll... We'll assess it, and we'll go from there.
Okay, they're done, right? They're absolutely done.
I think they were done before this, weren't
they?
Listen, I think if Steph Curry wanted to make a case that he's a top 10 player of all time, he was going to need to take this team with Draymond Green and drag them into the postseason. Because there is debate, and Michael Jordan's comments aside, there is debate of where he stands in history. Has he been so good because he's had the benefit of playing with good players? Now, that can be said for a lot of players as well. But this was going to be a season used as a litmus test. Now, he's got a broken hand. He's out for however long that's going to take. What we're going to get, though, what I can guarantee is a lot of quotables from one Draymond Green.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's going to be tough when you're relying on Draymond Green to lead your offense. Ugh.
Six.
I want to go back to baseball, or more specifically, the coverage of last night's World Series post-game. While all the hoopla was going on the field in Houston, back in Washington, a local television reporter watched the game at a bar with some fans. Now, something that I've done many, many, many times in my career, something which could go sideways very, very quickly, and last night, it did.
You've been such a gracious fan tonight. Tell me what your thoughts are about this World Series win.
I think this is huge for D.C. D.C. needed this. We got some ass in the White House.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Ashley, we've been out there in the masses, amongst the people, the fans. This kind of thing happens, but at least it wasn't the stuff that's been happening recently. This was more politically motivated.
Yep. I think my only story like that was that bad where I sat there and I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. I was at Red Bull Crashed Ice. and I was talking to the guy who kind of scouts the course for the skaters, and then he tells them the best way to take the corners and angles and what to expect. And the interview was going terribly. He was giving me one-word answers. He was not engaged. So I tried to pivot. I was like, every organizer around here, they all love you. They all think you're great. Like, what do you think about your personality that just draws people into you? And he's like, oh, so you want my hotel room number?
Oh, boy.
It was my first live eye experience when I was live remotes in the morning. And I was just like, oh, my God, I want to die. I would like to die right now.
We'll be right back.
Ryan Mon is our technical producer. We do a segment, usually about once a week, if it's appropriate, called Dark Side of the Mon. It's Halloween. And Ryan is going to tell the story of his annual pilgrimage for lunch, which he will make on a rainy day later today. Ryan's got a favorite restaurant, and he wants to pitch you on it. He'll do it next.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Time for Dark Side of the Mon.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Happy Halloween. We felt like October the 31st would be an appropriate time to dig up, no pun intended, a dark side of the Mon. So Ryan Mon is our technical producer. And great dude, outside of work, lives a little differently on the fringes. And each and every Halloween, as Ryan shared with us yesterday in our post-show meeting, he packs a picnic basket full of food and has lunch. Ryan Mon, this is the time to turn on your microphone. Lunch in a graveyard.
In a graveyard, that's correct.
You got to turn your levels up, Mon, or talk about it.
Is that better? Yeah. I got myself cranked now.
Or the music down a bit, one of the two.
I've been doing it for like 15, 16 years now.
Uh-huh. Okay, so I have
so
questions.
So many questions.
Why?
Why? Because it brings back memories of my childhood. I get to sit around the graves and eat my food. And
what the hell kind of childhood did you have?
I had a great childhood.
But what specifically about your childhood gets...
Because it's Halloween-y. You're surrounded by these tombs. I'm not just sitting there eating food and drinking beer. That would be weird. I've got, like, this Halloween mixtape that I listen to as well. I've got a clip
like
of it.
Like Monster Mash?
No, it's like, well, it's like clips from movies and sound effects and stuff. I got a clip. I sit in the graveyard and I listen to this.
What do you...
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It does this whenever it's told.
Oh, God, help me, please! Hello? Ma'am, please help me! Please! Can you hear me?
So, okay. So this is, just for everyone, this is not a bit. This is 1,000% full facts. You have gone for the last nearly two decades.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know what, though, guys? I know you guys have questions. It's better than trying to bring back childhood Halloween memories. Like, it would be worse if he was trying to hang around, like, kids all the time, right? Like, strangers' children's?
Like the white panelless van out in front of a school?
Yeah, like, graveyard vibes are better than
with the
white van, no window vibes.
With the airbrush wolf on them.
So, Mon, do you go to the same place every year?
Well, fortunately, I live near Mount Pleasant Cemetery.
Oh, thank God.
So it's massive. So I just can go to a different area every single year.
So if you want to join Ryan Mon today.
Is there a Facebook
page?
Around
there about noon?
Around noon, yes. Come on, join me, have a beer.
So you have lunch there. So I guess the first question for me would be, what's on the menu?
Today it's going to be a sub. I prefer having a sub.
A submarine sandwich.
That's correct. Because I'm going to be there for a while. If I get a pizza, it'll go cold.
Yeah, you don't want to look like an idiot.
No, don't
look like that'd be strange. Stupid.
Are you prepared for the elements? It's pouring.
Again, I take an umbrella, but I don't want to look weird
sitting out there with
yeah.
I think you could just throw that notion.
Oh my God.
Right out the window.
Yeah, Weird's gone.
I think
down the street.
Worrying about what people think of you at this point, don't even bother.
By the way, after the Silence of the Lambs thing on your mixtape, I hope the Undertaker's theme music is the follow up right there. Dark Side of the Mon. Lunch outdoors in the pouring rain in a graveyard. A Toronto Halloween tradition. This Canadian heritage moment has been brought to you by Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack. Vivek Jacob, Raptors beat reporter for Yahoo Sports, next hour.
Get an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. That's an extra large two-topping pizza. Wow! For only $11.99. So remember, get... Wow! For only... Only at Pizza Pizza.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher.
Do not settle. Demand. Demand.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Want to play a game? Live or die? Make your choice.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
Sometimes, that is better.
We'll tear your soul apart.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
I'm getting another beer. You want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back.
So that is definitely part of the mixtape for Dark Side of the Mon when he goes to the graveyard to have lunch, do his annual pilgrimage to a graveyard, Mount Pleasant Cemetery. Things we didn't clarify, the sub, do you stop at the sub shop on the way or do you find an Uber Eats or DoorDash person, give them no fixed address and say, just meet me at the cemetery?
That's a good idea. You should try that this time.
Don't do that. Don't drag people into your weird graveyard fetish. Don't do that.
And the other thing you know, he's got a boombox, and it's actually a cassette tape. It's not earbuds, and that's it.
That's it. Wild. Wild times, man. Happy Halloween, everybody. Are you dressing up for anything tonight? Are you guys going out?
So here's the thing. I should probably put a poll question up, because I can't make decisions for my own life.
Yeah, I know. Text me all the time.
I actually do. Ashley Docking, radio show host, and psychotherapist, all in one.
I prefer life coach.
Life coach. Right. You don't have the formal training. I can't call you doctor.
Yeah.
But you are helper, no question about it. So my nephew is 5. My niece is 2. And they live in Waterdown, which is in GTA traffic, a bit of a hike.
Mm-hmm.
But they're at that age where they're both going out now. My sister-in-law makes really cool costumes, especially for my nephew because he's at that age. And he's going as one of those, is it Goombas from Super Mario, the plants or the
yep.
that comes out of the tunnels? Like, so she's made one of those green tunnels and he'll pop his head up and like it's a really
so
cool
cute.
Costume. So I'm thinking like,
that's awesome.
I want to go and walk the streets of Waterdown with my brother, sister-in-law, nephew, and niece, but it's going to be pouring buckets. So they're 5 and 2. Next year, they're 6 and 3. Then 7 and 4, 8 and 5. There's a lot of years to go.
I know how that works. Thanks.
I'm just here for Ziggy with math. Yeah. 3 and love, 4 and 1, 5 and 2. So I'm trying to decide, like, it's can I push okay. this off? Should I push this off a year or should I make the
Here's what
effort
I think.
To go
and,
out?
And Ziggy, you can let me know if you agree with me. I think you should definitely go because, you know, you have to be a committed uncle. That's part of your job, is to be there for these moments and to help weather the elements. This is what I suggested for his costume, that he be the killer from I Know What You Did Last Summer, who's just in the fisherman's raincoat and then like just get a little hook for your hand.
I like it. I don't, I think it's a good idea. I don't know if I'm a bad uncle. I've never taken my nephews and niece for, for trick-or-treat. Well, one, I've never been here.
What?
Be the change you want to see in the world, Ziggy.
I haven't been here. Okay. Yeah, okay, maybe I'll give them. I'll text. How about that? I'll text my my nephews. They all have cell phones when they're 7 years old. So I'll see. I'll see what they're doing tonight. But I don't know. For costumes, what's your best costume?
My favorite costume was I was Spinelli from Recess 1 year. And her actual real name, I don't know if you know, you'd only know if you're a purist, is actually Ashley Spinelli. And she liked basketball, so I really felt like it was kind of me in cartoon form. So that was really good. This year I'm going as Tina Belcher from Bob's Burgers.
So I like that.
Okay. I think that's going to be good. Hugh is a big Bob's Burgers fan. He co-signed this. He's like, but you have to walk around and just start being like, because she just has like this like mumbly grunt thing that she does. And then people would know her more from the gif that she's very famous for. She has short brown hair, glasses, and it's like a twerk. And she's wearing all blue.
Yeah, you were showing me yesterday.
So that's what I'm doing, yeah.
So we'll get like full on Instagram stories and...
You might get a little Instagram snack, a little treat for the fans.
I like that.
And by fans, I mean just you. Singular one.
That's okay. One is better than love. I was going to say, one is better than none.
One is better than love.
Oh, Ziggy.
Yeah, I'm not dressing up tonight, but I have gone as, I've done the basic construction worker. I've done the Johnny Damon when I was living outside of Boston.
Well, because you had the Jesus hair back in the day.
Hello. I had the flow. Yeah,
did it was you have my the real beard?
Hair. Yeah, I grew out the full beard because the guys were kind of wondering what was up, right? From training camp, start of September, end of August. You kind of go into your city, and I was growing it out, and guys were like, what are you doing with the facial hair? And I was like, you know, I'm trying something new, and I grew it out the whole way
right
to the end of October. So that was a good outfit. I got all the gear through our equipment manager from the Red Sox.
Right.
So I had all the official pants and everything.
Authentic.
There was like, yeah, everything was done up. It was a real jersey and everything. So
no one took a hit as a sex symbol more in their career than Johnny Damon when he went to the Yankees.
Because he had to cut the hair.
He had to cut his hair.
Shave the beard.
Shave his beard, and he lost all his rugged powers. And everyone's like, oh, wait, Johnny, hey, can't wait to see you in the L. Oh, just going to get some new seats that are much cheaper up in the nosebleeds because this ain't it, Chief.
You're suddenly very plain. But that's what they talk about with, like, Dallas Keuchel when he was a free agent. If he signed with the Yankees, that garden gnome hipster thing he has going on his face.
Gotta go. Yeah, certain behavior in certain cities. It's interesting what different organizations will put up with, and I'm interested to see how the Philadelphia 76ers and the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to be disciplined by the league and what they do in terms of internal communication to their guys, because Joel Embiid and Karl Anthony Towns get into a skirmish and a Philadelphia win over the Minnesota Timberwolves last night. But Ben Simmons was the next man in, because him and Karl Anthony Towns are actually quite good friends. So he jumps in, tries to restrain Towns. And I know the memes and the GIFs and the videos all over the internet is that Ben Simmons choking out Karl Anthony Towns. He like taps out because he hits the ground in frustration. But it's actually Ben Simmons just trying to like restrain his friend because of everything that can happen when you have these big bodies just throwing bombs at each other.
Was that considered a bench clearing?
No,
brawl?
Because the only people that come off the bench are the coaches. The players will get in so much trouble. It's similar to coming off the bench in hockey fight. It was David Clarkson. Is that who I'm shouting at right now? Hey, sir. But you get in a ton of trouble if you do that. So the coaches actually have been given the authority by the league to go in and help try and break it up because the officials will be too overwhelmed.
That really didn't look like a line brawl even. That looked like a grade 6 wrestling match.
Well, Ashley and I were talking about it before the show and we were going through it frame by frame. Did we determine how we feel about whether Karl Anthony Towns intentionally cocked back and missed punching Joel Embiid, or that he meant to punch him with a closed fist and just missed?
Just missed. I feel as though there was a moment of...
like second thought, like, I can't do this.
Cause
it's tough to throw, though. I find it easy to take him, but it's hard to connect with something. One, it's just... some guys just that don't fight, and I don't think a lot of... I don't want to make... generalizations about sports, but I feel like basketball players can't throw. They don't throw. They can't throw.
I feel like Kendrick Perkins might have something to say about that. I will say Kevin Garnett, I feel like, is kind of a fake tough guy, but there are a lot of guys in the league that will.
Like,
they'll throw hands.
I wouldn't have messed with Bill Laimbeer back in the day.
Yeah.
Bad boy Pistons teams. Rasheed.
Well, what did we
want? Patrick Ewing.
Who went into the stands?
Ron Artest. What are you talking about? The malice at the Palace in 04? Yeah.
And that was nothing compared to the 70 Bruins that went into MSG. And Milbury?
Mike Milbury took somebody, a fan's shoe, and started pummeling with him with the shoe.
Yeah, but that was just one person. Like, the thing about malice at the Palace is that it was so many people, and it was Ron Artest got a drink thrown at him. That's what kind of tipped it off, because the skirmish on the court was dying down, right? Ben Wallace was blocked. I think it was by Jackson. I'm not too sure in this moment, but Ben Wallace was blocked, and he took exception to that because the game was already well in hand. There was about 45 seconds left on the clock. The Indiana Pacers were going to win, and so Wallace took exception to the fact that his shot was blocked, or that the Pacers were still playing like this really tough brand of defense, and so there was a skirmish on the court. But the real problem came when Ron Artest was lying on the scorer's table, super casual, looking like he's tanning on a beach somewhere, and a fan threw a drink at him, and he snapped. And you know what? I don't blame him. Someone throws a drink at you, you're going to get upset.
Well, Ashley, so let's assume, too, that some words were probably uttered by white dude in crowd at African-American basketball player.
I wouldn't put it past anyone. Absolutely not. It still happens. It happened last year. Russell Westbrook, there was an incident like that. So listen, I definitely can co-sign that, or I at least can get on board with that notion. But fights like this, the fans love them, and everyone likes to say that the NBA is the best league in the world just because of the content, and the athletes are outspoken and they're funny and they embrace showing personality and all of that stuff. But a fight like this is a nightmare for the league, because Malice of the Palace nearly ruined the league at that point. It nearly killed the NBA because everyone's like, who are these thugs? There was blame being placed. Commentators were torn. They either blamed the players or they blamed the fans. There really wasn't a line to straddle. You picked a side. And it was one thing that was just horrible for the league and their reputation, because it was around the same time they're battling quote unquote urban looks from players, and they're trying to fight against this was a bit before Allen Iverson, but trying to battle Allen Iverson a little later on with his cornrows and his jerseys and his chains and his baggy pants, and they're like, come in suits, this isn't what sells to sponsors.
What year did they it's got to be about a decade now that they forced players to wear two or three pieces at the podiums after games.
The
right?
NBA dress code changed in 2005 with David Stern. But the thing that people kind of misunderstand is that it's not what they wear coming into the arena. It's what they wear on the bench, when they're on the bench with their team, if they're not playing.
Right.
I believe that's what's most impressed upon when it comes to these rules.
What was Westbrook wearing when he came into the arena the other day? That he had like shiny leather pants on.
Yep.
And like a tank.
Oh, but Russ has been...
That was the craziest outfit I've ever seen.
That's not even that crazy. Like, a couple years ago, he came in dressed as essentially a cameraman with, like, a reflective vest on, or like he's works at a crosswalk.
Like, just get Russ and Cam Newton into a room. And have, like, one-offs.
Well,
like,
Jordan Clarkson had a moment.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was last night. He came with the Cam Newton scarf tied around his neck with his sunglasses and, like, actually a very nice tailored suit. And my favorite comment about that was Jordan Clarkson looks like he's going to mourn the husband that he poisoned in a church. Just sitting in the front pew, emotion, a fake tear dabbing your eye. But, yeah, that Karl Anthony Towns situation, Joel Embiid situation. Joel Embiid is a character, to say the least. And it carried over onto social media after the fact, both calling each other witches, if you will. Happy Halloween, everybody. And Joel Embiid getting personal, though, bringing up problems potentially with Jimmy Butler when he was in Minnesota with the Timberwolves, and how he heard about all that tea when he was moved to the 76ers. So I feel like this isn't over. It's just too bad they don't play each other more.
So was Towns' mom, did she give the finger?
To Joel Embiid?
Yeah.
That's allegedly, yeah. What happened?
So, I mean, there was that. And then, like, Jimmy Butler never got named, but it was so clear.
But he got tagged.
Oh, yeah.
In
he
the
got
Joel
tagged.
Embiid's initial Instagram post, but then not name dropped in the comments.
And the Heat are in Atlanta tonight. So they had they didn't play last night. So they had an off night in Atlanta, which is a party town. No question about that. So I wonder when Butler first got wind of all of this. Did his phone start blowing up?
Blowing up. Had to have.
I mean.
Had to have. Because even if he's not paying attention and doing something else, his inner circle definitely has ears to the ground, eyes on social, eyes on Twitter always.
And it takes you right back to that interview he gave with Rachel Nichols when he was still in Minnesota at the start of last season, right?
Jimmy Butler?
Yeah. Like it's, man, I just, the drama in the NBA, it's so good.
And it's one of those things that people get mad, or maybe not even mad, maybe disappointed, or you consider it the end of an era now where players don't spend their careers in the same city ever. And that goes actually all across sports now. It's very rare to see someone be drafted by a team, stay there their whole career, retire. Maybe 1 or 2 years at the end, they go vet minimum somewhere, and then they sign a ceremonial contract to retire as the team with the team that drafted them. But the one good thing is that you get all this kind of storytelling, weaving of tales, weaving of lives, and the infighting that comes along with it and the drama. Because listen, no matter who you are, even if you're the most amicable person, you're not going to get along with everybody. You're not going to like everybody. It's your job to play sports with them on whatever playing surface that entails. But after that, it doesn't mean that you're friends.
And there's never anything more in the social media day and age than a 1 degree of separation. So look, I mean, Butler's all of a sudden thrown into the middle of this hundreds of miles away down in Atlanta on an off night as brawl or something close to plays out in Philadelphia. And then Steph Curry breaks his hand. So blue skies, sunshine, Oakland, San Francisco, Bay Area, dynasty. And I think when you go through it, I mean, none of us in here, to my knowledge, are Warriors fans, but I always found them to be like pretty benign. I know Draymond loved to talk, but they attracted KD in free agency, but they were a draft and develop team. They were an irrelevant franchise for a very long time in a state that also featured the Los Angeles Lakers. Like, who are the Golden State Warriors? And then all of a sudden, Steph Curry comes along, Klay Thompson comes along, everything changes, and they become a destiny. They become a dynasty. They become a place guys want to play. And now the clouds have rolled in.
Well,
some adversity for this dynasty.
And I hate to say kind of bad things come in threes, but when you look at KD, Klay Thompson, now Steph Curry, you're just like, this has to be it, right? Like, what else could go wrong for them?
It's amazing how injuries happen on teams that aren't playing well. And I've seen it in not just basketball. I've seen it in hockey a lot, playing on teams that,
like, you feel cursed.
It's just like, well, in Pittsburgh, the year that we won the cup, it's just every guy went down with an injury. Things weren't going well, and guys just get injured. And I don't know if it's more of just like a curse, or is it like, okay, we're not winning right now, and an injury I would usually play through, now I can't. And I'm not saying that about, obviously, Steph Curry's broken hand. He's going to be out. But a lot of like groin pulls and Charlie horses, when things don't go well, it's like, I'm not going to play through this. But when things are going well, you fight through it.
But to Ashley's point about, like you wonder if this is it. Think about this, though. Like, the Golden State, I'll repeat what I said. The Golden State Warriors were pointless for, like, and I'm not pointless by, like, they didn't score any points. Like, a pointless franchise. And nobody ever talked about them. Nobody had any reason to give them any credence. They had Latrell Sprewell choking PJ Carlissimo. That was like the one story that came out of the Bay Area related to that franchise of any consequence over like a 30-year period. And then all these guys come in and they become this dynasty. Now they've got this brand new, brilliant arena on the other side of the Bay in San Francisco. And what if they just become, I don't know if they devolve back into nothingness, but what if they just become a meh franchise again?
What happens to Steve Kerr? How much credit do you give him for how well they've done?
A lot of credit. A lot of management with professional sports, and you know this, it comes down to managing personalities. And when you have a game like the like basketball, when you're talking about the NBA, and there are so many mouths to feed and only one ball and only one shot can go up, it takes a lot for a coach to get the players to buy in and play for each other. And for a team like the Golden State Warriors, who largely homegrown talent until KD decided to go there, this was a team that they cultivated from essentially nothing, as Scott said. So their rise to fame and Steve Kerr's part in that, I don't think it can be underrated, but you're right. It's almost like they needed Chase 2.5 years ago. They earned a brand new building. They're like, wow, if you build it, they will come. Look at this dynasty team that we have. Then the Raps ruined them in six on their home floor. KD goes down. Clay goes down. Now Steph goes down. Now what? Now what is the question?
Imagine,
it's crazy.
Imagine everybody leaves this. It completely implodes going forward, and now they have their brand. Like, it's – how crazy would that be?
But they're also – you get Steph back, you get Clay back next year.
Boom,
you know,
you're ready.
You know,
you're an automatic contender.
Yeah.
If you don't have a big three, I don't know how far you're going to go, but if you have a duo like that, you're always going to be in contention. It's exactly what's happening in Dallas with Doncic and Porzingis.
A little later on this hour, we'll open up the phone lines and we'll do a little rock and talk. Your chance to win tickets, two of them, to see the Mississauga Steelheads in OHL action on November 15th, and a chance to get into the draw, which we will make tomorrow morning at the top of the 8 o'clock hour to see the Leafs host the Kings on Tuesday night. Vivek Jacob covers the Raptors for Yahoo Sports Canada, and he will join us next.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Your team could be playing in a game called by Joe Bowen and Jim Ralph. Live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan for the first annual Champions of Rec League Cup. I wonder if Gozer the Gozerian is going to be there. If your team was nominated, this is your last week to tune in every weekday to hear if we announce it. And you can also enter online for a chance to be the wild card team. David Roberts, not the manager of the LA Dodgers, but David Roberts of Thornhill, nominated and captains the team Rob's Renegades. If you're on the team, Rob's Renegades, you have 590 seconds right now to call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or star 590 on your cell to qualify for the voting round of this contest. Find all details at sportsnet.ca/590. Good luck to Rob's Renegades. Vivek Jacob covers the Raptors for Yahoo Sports Canada and joins us now on Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack after a Raptors win over the Pistons last night. Good morning, my friend. Is Dwayne Casey salty or not salty? Do you believe him?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I don't think he's salty, but at the same time, his comments, you know, he's friendly enough, but at the same time, he's got that passive aggressiveness where he feels like he could have done exactly what Nurse did last season. When he talks about the offense could have been, it looks pretty much the same. The defense looks pretty much the same. But frankly, what it comes down to is the fact that Nurse made adjustments in the playoffs that fans in Toronto hoped to see over the years that Dwayne Casey was around. And I think that's been the biggest difference. Even though it's just been one playoff run for Nurse, I think that run showed enough. When you talk about the box and one in the finals, when you look at changing matchups with the Milwaukee Bucks, I think those are the big factors that I look at.
When you think about, well, when I talk about Dwayne Casey, I also think that if he is a little salty, that's also fine, Vivek. Like, yeah, I understand. Like, your ex got married before you did.
Mm-hmm.
There's some human element to that. So I think it is okay. I don't think he's like big mad, but I think if he's in his feelings, that's fine. But the Raptors, I just need them to be this year with Nick Nurse, the team that just takes care of business when they need to, right? Like, I don't know what your guess is for how many wins they're going to have or where they're going to finish in the division, but it seems to me like this team who, as of right now, they have some depth questions, need to take care of teams like the Detroit Pistons like they did last night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think before the season started, I've had them flirting with close to the 50-win mark, but now with the way Siakam is playing, that looks like they can blow by that, no problem. As far as the depth is concerned, I think the big names that you look at are Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet. Kyle's averaging 39 minutes a game through the five games. Fred VanVleet's up at 37. So those are definitely alarming numbers early on. You want to get that down. Nick Nurse said after the game that, you know, he liked to get them down by a few. Kyle says, as usual, that he's happy to play as many minutes as the team needs to win games. So I think that's something you need to work towards, but the big issue is obviously who do you trust then coming off the bench to provide the playmaking. Patrick McCaw, we've seen him pick up some minutes now, and Nick Nurse seems to have a lot of faith in him. But Terrence Davis, after getting some minutes, some looks early on, he looks like he's dropped out of the rotation. So it's going to be tough unless they, you know, make a move down the line. It is going to be tough.
Yeah, like Serge gets all the credit in the world because I think we forget and we get washed up in the Marc Gasol magistry that we saw, that Serge was the one who stepped aside and did what was asked of him in a different role once Gasol took over a ton of important center minutes in the postseason. So you can count on him. Norm's been really up and down. And for me, I think you look to someone like, is it going to be Stanley Johnson who can finally find his lottery form here?
Yeah, and you would have thought if there was a revenge game on the cards, it would be
Detroit.
But, you know, for him to not get on the court, at the same time, you know, Nick Nurse did have some his first encouraging words for Stanley Johnson before the game and talking about how he seems to be really picking up speed with the defensive schemes, with the rotations. It's just offensively that he really seems to struggle. Just looking to do too much. I mean, I think he's got to look around and understand that this team knows how to score the ball if he just plays within himself, especially that game against Chicago. You see that once he has a couple of nice defensive plays, he just wants to show that he can do things on the offensive end too, and then that's when the turnovers come in. And I think he just needs to understand that his role on this team is to just play defense and get back down the court to at least present that the Raptors are playing 5-on-5.
With Vivek Jacob, the Raptors beat reporter for Yahoo Sports Canada, this is Lead Off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So the Embiid-Towns thing in Philly last night takes some headlines, Vivek, but Steph Curry breaks his hand.
Right.
Are the Warriors screwed? Now, I guess for context, I'm asking, how long is it that they are screwed for? Is this an Admiral David Robinson situation where he gets hurt and, you know, the Spurs end up missing the playoffs and plummeting and end up taking Tim Duncan as a result, and then the next year they're great again? Like, Curry, Thompson, they're back next year, things are fine. Or are we seeing the decline of the empire here?
I do think the first example you provided is probably closer to it. I mean, when you look at Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green, and if you can add potentially a top five pick to that mix, I think you've got a strong core once again. This season may have just been too soon of a turnaround to come off the loss of Kevin Durant. When you look at the depth issues, you know, they sacrificed a lot of depth to be able to get Kevin Durant. And so to lose him and not be able to really replace that, I think that's a big blow. And so when you look at next season, they can now project forward and understand that this season's going to be really tough. With Draymond Green being the only sort of championship holdover, with Klay Thompson now likely, you know, it was unlikely he was going to play this season anyway, but now I think with Steph Curry out of the picture, there is absolutely no reason for Klay Thompson to come back at any point. So I think there's going to be a lot of growing pains the rest of the way, but at the same time, they get to figure out who is worth a spot for next season and everyone's pretty much playing for a job now the rest of the way. And next season, I think they can come back healthy and be a force once again.
Vivek, let's do this again soon. Really appreciate your insight this morning.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Vivek Jacob, Raptors beat reporter for Yahoo Sports Canada.
The best.
So the Washington Nationals, managed by Dave Martinez, the captain of the fan club, Ashley Docking, and everybody else in D.C. celebrating a World Series championship.
I mean, I didn't celebrate it as hard as I did when the Raptors won.
You don't mind being right, though.
I don't.
You don't mind being right. It's not the worst thing in your life.
I don't hate it. But listen, I'm not one to be like, I told you so, because I think that this is special for sports fans in general. It's a team that essentially went against all odds. They're the St. Louis Blues of the Major League Baseball world, right? They were down and out. Their record was similar to the Blue Jays at one point this season, and then they were able to turn it around. And they were odds off favorite to win. They had a manager who was literally hospitalized. They had to get through a lot together as a team, but keep fighting was their mantra, and they did.
Go ahead.
There's something always special. I love the post-game or the post-win interviews, and it's not so much what they say, it's what they don't say, and it's the stares, right? They get interviewed, and it doesn't matter what sport, but even last night, it's like, what does this mean? How does this feel? And almost every guy's like, as a kid, when I was watching, it's hard to believe I'm in this moment, and it's kind of the chuckles and the stares, how they're just kind of looking into space. Because you know they're reliving all the moments. I didn't play in the playoffs, but I was there with Pittsburgh as an extra. And even just winning, not being in it, it's one of those things where there was so much sacrifice to get to that point. And you see it a lot in those interviews especially. And it's not just what they say. It's like those stares. Because I know what they're going through. And you're always thinking like, man, I sacrificed this. I did this. I went through this injury. I mean, you can go right down the line, and that's great. And I know with hockey players, a lot of them will just say, I got no words. They usually don't say anything. Last night, guys had a little bit more insight, which I thought was great. But yeah, it's just kind of the stares into space.
Well, and again, this is when you talk about family and sacrifices, Strasburg accepts the MVP trophy with his two daughters beside him, right? Daniel Hudson got a lot of grief from a few unnecessarily angry individuals for skipping a postseason game to be there for his daughter's birth, right? So this is a team that sometimes did things even a little bit differently and against the you got to run through a wall for your teammates thing. And it's like, no, this team had perspective. They had calm. They had composure. And maybe that's one of the reasons that they were able to fight through so much adversity, because they knew it was important, but they also knew it wasn't the end of the world.
Well, and juxtapose that against that Astros front office and just the complete mishandling of that situation with the assistant general manager. But also think about it from the city of Washington's perspective. The Capitals win a Stanley Cup a year and a bit ago, supposedly past their contendership window. The Washington Nationals watch Bryce Harper walk out the door to Philadelphia for $330 million on a decade-long contract. The Nationals weren't supposed to be, they weren't supposed to suck, but they weren't supposed to be a thing. They paid a lot of money to Patrick Corbin to keep that starting rotation, Scherzer and Strasburg Corbin. So they had a strong starting rotation, but they weren't supposed to win the World Series this year. They win it kind of past the competitive window or the contendership window. The Washington Mystics are the champions of the WNBA.
Can you consider them the city of champions? Like, are they the
Boston yet.
Are they Boston of the 2000s, right?
Well, of the 2018 and 19, maybe. You got to get into the multiple championship.
Well, you got to go back to 04, do you not? With the Red Sox?
A little before that with the Patriots. 01, I think.
But that's 02, that's when the conversation
absolutely
started.
Technically, Edmonton's a city of champions. It says so on their city limit sign. So
I think they might have taken that
I think they
down.
They definitely changed it when I was there in 2014.
That's gone.
Yeah. But you know what? With Leon and McConnor leading the way, James Neal supporting cast, you never know.
Peter Klima and his helmet left town 30 years ago, and Warren Moon hasn't quarterbacked our football team for 35 years. Maybe it's time maybe it's time.
You know, you have to always aspire to something.
City of champions forever.
You know what, Scott? I don't appreciate that.
But what does Washington need to do to be considered in that? Yeah.
Get their ish together for their football team and something with the Wizards. I don't know. They'll never take that moniker, but they've had a hell of a year.
They certainly have. 416-870-0590. The phone lines are open right now. We're about to play Rock and Talk for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Mississauga Steelheads in OHL action on November 15th, and for your chance to get into the weekly draw, which we will make at about 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, to see the Leafs host the Kings on Tuesday. Get to calling.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Leadoff presents Rock and Talk.
This is for your chance to see the Mississauga Steelheads in OHL action on November 15th and an opportunity to get into the draw, which we will make tomorrow morning, for a pair of tickets to see the Leafs host Drew Doughty and the LA Kings on Tuesday night. We've been talking about Stamkos and Ovechkin coming into town, using the media. Drew Doughty always seems to do that when the Kings come to town. So we are playing Rock and Talk today. Before we welcome our first contestant onto the line, let's how do they say it? Drop today's track. I might be too strung out on compliments, overdosed on confidence, started not to give a and stopped fearing the consequence. Drinking every night because we drink to my accomplishments. Faded way too long, I'm floating in and out of consciousness. Trevor in Etobicoke for an opportunity to go to a hockey game and maybe two. Do you know the name of this song and the artist?
I don't, sorry.
Thank you. I was heartbroken.
Oh my, next time, keep calling in. Keep fighting the good fight.
I'm like, I found myself, I want Trevor and Etobicoke to win something here in the next little bit. We're not going to fix it. We're not going to make it happen, but we're rooting for you.
Up next, Trevor and Etobicoke. No, I'm joking.
Hello. Well, we got to call him Mike and Caledon, but it might be Trevor and Etobicoke. Mike and Caledon, do you want to hear it again or... do you want to hazard a guess?
No, I'll take a guess. It's Headlines by Drake.
Yeah!
That's just something they know. They know, they know, they
it's
know.
It's a hit is what it is.
They know, they know, they know.
Congratulations, they know, Mike in Caledon.
Yeah, they know.
You win a pair of tickets to see the Mississauga Steelheads in action on November 15th. And you are into the draw, which we will make in 24 hours and 7 minutes, 8 o'clock about tomorrow morning, for a chance to see the Leafs host the Kings on Tuesday night. Jam-packed 8 o'clock hour. John Paul Morosi on the world champion Washington Nationals, and Emily Kaplan, the hockey reporter, or a hockey reporter for ESPN, on the state of the Maple Leafs. The Oilers win again last night, still top-heavy, and we'll spin you around the National Hockey League with Emily. She joins us next.
Get an extra-large two-topping pizza
wow!
for only $11.99. That's an extra-large two-topping pizza
wow!
for only $11.99. So remember, get
wow!
for only at Pizza Pizza.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Lead off with Ashley.
My birthday was yesterday and everybody forgot. I got really dressed up and excited and no one said a word. There wasn't even a party. I think sometimes people are really mean to the hot, popular girl.
Ziggy.
What do you think of him?
Who is he? Who is he?
Jesus.
And Scotty Mack.
I happen to be training for a triathlon right now, so doing a lot of running and cycling, swimming. Well, you know all about that.
No, actually, I don't. I play real sports. I'm not trying to be the best at exercising.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Emily Kaplan a little later on in the hour, and we'll discuss some Maple Leafs. Spin you around the National Hockey League. Wild one in New Jersey. The Lightning beat the Devils 7-6 last night.
Taylor Hall in his feelings.
Leon Draisaitl with a couple of goals for the Oilers. They keep winning, but again, they're top heavy, so we'll detail all of that with Emily. John Paul Morosi of MLB Network joins us now. The Washington Nationals are world champions. JP, good morning. If I sat you down the final week of May and I said, John, the Washington Nationals will win the World Series with expletives deleted, you would have said what to me?
Unbelievable. Literally incredible, as in it could not be believed in that moment. I'll tell you a story a little earlier than that. Early May, I was working a broadcast for MLB Network in Philadelphia between the Nationals and the Phillies, and the Nationals had just fired Derek Lilliquist as their pitching coach. And so we get to Philadelphia for this broadcast, and the broadcast crew is Matt Vasgersian, Joe Girardi, and myself. And I remember thinking somewhat awkwardly as Joe Girardi was going through the manager interviews as we do before the game, you sit down with each manager, and he's sitting there interviewing Dave Martinez with us, and I'm thinking to myself, if they fire Dave in the next couple weeks, which at that point in time seemed entirely likely, they're probably going to hire Joe. This is awkward. And here we are all these months later. Dave just won the World Series, and now Joe is going to manage the Bryce Harper-led Phillies in Harper's effort to try to atone for this year, which, by the way, he even forecasted himself during that press conference when Bryce said, we're going to bring a championship back to D.C. I mean, Philly. Mm-hmm. He was right the first time. So I would say to that whole story, because, of course, speaking briefly is not my strength, I would just say unbelievable. It was literally not something I could have believed based on those thoughts that I had about how awkward it must have been for Joe and Dave to be in the same room at that point in time when it looked like Dave's job was in jeopardy. But good thing they did not make a change, and now they win the World Series with the oldest roster in baseball in 2019. How about that?
How about that? But I really feel as though the anti-analytics crew is going to take this oldest roster in baseball thing and really run with it. But this team seemed to just be special from the get-go, from the wild card game, really from the moment where Zimmerman's bat broke on the miracle single that really shouldn't have even gone into play. Like, he should have been out, and then it kind of sparked something with this team. Do you believe in things like that, John? Do you believe in the quote-unquote teams of destiny?
I think there can be, actually, some baseball karma that develops during the course of a run. And whether it's a belief or I think it's more than luck. I really don't think that luck has much to do with it. I think the game tends to offer opportunities to both teams, and it's just a matter of how they capitalize on them. And I think the Nationals, to your point, maybe a good break there with Zimmerman, but they had to still win five elimination games against certainly the last four against elite teams, two against the Dodgers, two against the Astros. I mean, there's no accident there. And I think that the way they won the game last night, there was questions about certainly umpiring at different times. To me, it was a fairly clear situation in this series that the Nationals earned it. They won four games on the road in this series alone. They won five elimination games, actually, as you pointed out. They earned this. And this is not any kind of fluke or really even a failing on the part of the Astros, except for the fact I believe Game 7 was lost by Houston in the early innings. They did not add on enough. They were 1-for-8 with men in scoring position, 10 stranded runners. You cannot win Game 7 of the World Series like that. And it was an amazing World Series. I think it got better and more dramatic as it went along. A bit more of a – I think the last game was the latest lead change that we saw So we finally had some drama at the end from the standpoint of a script flipping on us in the later innings. But the Nationals, to me, they when you look at the roster, though, they've got the big three, or at least the big two, and then Corbin as well. Sanchez played a key role for them at different times of the year. And their bullpen got better as the year went along. They trusted Daniel Hudson, two Tommy John surgeries. An amazing story. Adam Eaton, Soto, these are all guys on the roster who could have been compromised or diminished in terms of their playing time had Harper come back. He did not. They were able to build, I think, a more efficient outfield mix as a result. And now they can call themselves world champions in the U.S.'s nation's capital for the first time in 95 years.
Now, when we look at Greinke, we were talking earlier in the show about how when he got pulled, if it was the right time. Do you believe it was the right move to kind of take him out before it got worse? Or do you kind of leave him in there and let him get out of his jam?
Well, I'll say, Mike, that for me, I did not, in that moment, second-guess AJ for taking him out. I really didn't. Because of a couple reasons. Number one, it seems that the Astros' analytical belief and or AJ's belief was that whenever Greinke was going to lose his stuff, it was going to happen pretty quickly. And I think they were afraid of that happening. And you get the fresh arm. You got a righty-righty matchup. Will Harris has been an all-star. He's been your go-to reliever all season long in a spot just like that. I really didn't have an issue with it. And I know that there's been some criticism. Oh, why did you put in Gerrit Cole? To me, I'd rather put in Will Harris doing something he's done all year long than Gerrit Cole, something he's basically never done in his entire career. That to me, would not have been fair to Gerrit. I do think at some point in time, I would have liked to have seen Gerrit in that game. But, you know, the one thing I'll say, you know, again, this is hindsight. I was not thinking at the time, by the way. I want to make that clear. The way you could have said it was, listen, do you then start, if you were going to pull Greinke in the seventh at the first sign of trouble, why not just go to Cole to start the seventh inning? If that was your plan, if you thought he was that close to losing it, then maybe just have Gerrit start the inning fresh. But Greinke's pitch count was at such an efficient point that it was difficult to bring him out at that point in time. So tough call by AJ. I think he managed a really good series too. The Nationals just played better, and they're the deserving champions.
With John Palmarosi of MLB Network. So Davey Martinez, let's just break this down for a second. He manages a franchise for which he once played, because he was an Expo, to its first,
right, he was. Good call.
Its first World Series championship 3 years after being the bench coach under Joe Maddon for the Chicago Cubs, a team for which he once played, to its drought-busting world championship. This guy had a cup of coffee with the Toronto Blue Jays as a player in the year 2000. He's the second consecutive Puerto Rican manager, Alex Cora last year, to win a World Series. He had a heart issue later in the summer, John Paul, that was scary, that hospitalized him.
Yes.
I mean, you've obviously had an opportunity to speak to him. You can add some context into the type of person we're dealing with here. Tell us a bit about what you know that maybe we don't about Dave Martinez.
Well, that's a great way of describing him, Scott. And really, it's a unique story because of those two droughts that you mentioned. It really is remarkable. He is someone who, I think for that team, he was the right call when they ended up letting go Dusty Baker, which at the time, I didn't like the fact that they fired Dusty. But if they were going to do it, it made sense to bring in someone like Davey Martinez. And I say that because a great baseball guy, knows the game so well, was around through the Joe Maddon in both Tampa and in Chicago, won the World Series ring, as you mentioned. But he's also somebody who helps the players feel at ease with themselves. He had a good play career. And I think that earns him a lot of credibility with the players. And I also just think the way that he relates to people is very, very impressive. I think he helps, of course, being bilingual, helps relate to the whole clubhouse. He does that very well. And I think that for a team that was dealing with high and unrealized expectations, Scott, for such a long time, it helped to have someone who was that calming influence. I think Dave Martinez has been that for the Nationals, and you're right. Those are two lines on your resume. First championship ever for the Expos Nationals franchise, first one in D.C. in 95 years, and then, of course, from 2016 as well. some pretty serious baseball history attached to his name. And I think he's rightly going to get a lot of recognition as one of the top managers right now in the National League.
And just as a little side anecdote, when it comes to Davey Martinez after his game 6 ejection, one of my favorite stories coming out of this World Series matchup was the fan who was yelling, "Your heart, Davey, your heart," as he's being restrained by two of his bench coaches going in on the umpire for the Trey Turner call at first. Little anecdotes like that are kind of what really give this series life. But I do want to talk to you about Gerrit Cole a little bit. There were reports that whether it was tongue-in-cheek or whether he was serious, I don't really know him in terms of his personality. I think he's a little bit lighthearted, but still gives some really thoughtful answers. When asked to do some post-game media avail, he's like, "Well, do I have to? I'm a free agent. I don't even really work for this team anymore." So next year, when you look at the market for him and what he did in this postseason and how much he's going to get paid, what are some realistic landing places for him? Because I don't think he's staying in Houston.
I would agree with that, Ashley. I think that's a good point about where his market could go. I agree. I think the likelihood of him staying with the Astros is very, very slim. I look at him and say he's probably going to get in that $30 million a year range times 6 or 7. I think that we have seen pitchers get that in the range there of 7 times 30, and I think that's probably where he's heading. Now, Padres, Angels, maybe the Yankees, there's a lot of teams out there that I think realize, interestingly, that in this year of the opener and different sort of avant-garde ways to manage your staff and your pitching deployment overall, that the two teams with these very stalwart seeming traditional rotations made it to the World Series. And I do think that we could see a bit of a back to the future mentality this wintertime, where go get the ace is a really strong rallying cry for a number of clubs. But I would say that if you added up the probability of him going to the Yankees, the Padres, and the Angels, you would get pretty close to 50% in terms of all the possible outcomes right now. Maybe you'd mix in the Giants, of course. His brother-in-law, Brandon Crawford, plays with the Giants. But you want to find a team that's ready to win and has a clear need for starting pitching. And I do think that Angels, Padres, Yankees all match that description. Maybe the White Sox. I would say the White Sox, after missing big last winter on Machado and Harper, and at least trying in a big way to get the both and failing, I think we will see them really become players again this wintertime. The White Sox may, in fact, find a way to put together a $30 million a year bid for Gerrit Cole as well.
With John Paul Morosi of MLB Network, on the Steven Strasburg front. So I think sometimes, I'm certainly guilty of this, we fool ourselves into thinking, why would he walk away from 7 and 175? Because he's got an opt-out. Well, it's not that, JP. He's got 4 and 100 left on his deal with an opt-out here, a decision to be made within the next 72 hours or so. It is obvious to me, and call me dumb if you want to, it is obvious to me that he should do this. And it isn't that he leaves Washington, but he sits down with Mike Rizzo, the Nationals general manager, and says, let's tack on 3 more years on the end of this. Let's make a new 7-year contract. We've got 4 and 100 in the books. Let's add 3 and another 80 to it. And now I've got 7, 180, and I'm good to go till I'm 37, 38 years old. Is that how you foresee this happening? Or could he actually end up somewhere else?
I think, it's exactly as you described it. He is a Scott Boras client. Scott Boras has Cole, Rendon, Strasburg, J.D. Martinez, Dallas Keuchel. He in many ways is controlling the free agent market this wintertime. And so I'm quite sure Scott's advice will be, yes, please opt out. It's going to do us all a big favor. It's going to help everybody. It's going to, because more free agents of a high profile mean more information to Scott, which means the whole group is better off. But I think in general, for Strasburg, you're right. I think that it makes sense to opt out, renegotiate. We saw Kershaw do that last year. CeCe Sabathia many years ago did the same thing with the Yankees. It just makes sense. I tend to agree with you, Scott, in the sense that he is likely to stay one way or the other, because Strasburg, there's been so much said oh, well, he's from the West Coast, maybe he wants to go there. Strasburg is a noted introvert. He just likes his space. He likes to really just kind of do his job and not worry about too many ancillary things, which is great. And it's hard to do that if you're playing in your hometown. But Mike can speak to just how that works in the hockey context, too. Why for a long time it wasn't always easy for the Leafs to bring the hometown guys back to Toronto with of course, the notable reason, exception of Tavares. It's tough. It's tough to go back home. You got all the family and friends and a lot of pressure. And Steven, I think, likes the fact in some ways he's on the opposite side of the country. He's with some other great starters in Corbin and Scherzer. It's a great situation for him. And I really think that the Lerner family, who own the Nationals, they are very loyal. And I believe they will show Steven a lot of loyalty. It may even be amplified by the fact that Bryce did not show the same. And so, hey, one guy left, one guy stayed. He wanted the championship. He was the World Series MVP. Let's make sure that Strasburg is a national for the balance of his career. I think that's the most likely outcome, an opt-out, and then ultimately a reunion with the Washington Nationals.
You on the way to Mexico for the Olympic qualifier?
I am. Thank you for the question. I appreciate it. Yeah, so I am on my way to broadcast for the World Baseball Softball Confederation, the Olympic qualifiers there, the Premier 12, as it's called, the WBSC Premier 12. Canada is in it, but they are not in my group. But I will hope to see our Canadian friends when it comes to the final round in Japan, which I plan to cover the last few games of that, too, as well. So it should be a lot of fun, a lot of travel here coming up at the end of the postseason. But love it, and I love my international baseball, love being around it. There's a unique brand of the passion you see on the field, guys. So I will wish Canada well in their group, and hopefully we'll catch up with them there down the line.
I expect a souvenir. Please.
I've been given lots of instructions from my family. Of course, in 2 days, El Día de los Muertos, a big holiday. Of course, it's in Mexico, a huge part of the heritage there. If you haven't seen Coco, watch it, learn it. Great holiday. So I've been told to bring back a lot of souvenirs of El Día de los Muertos in Dos Días Más. So it should be very interesting.
Wow. That's nice. Full-on accent there. I don't need a souvenir. John, just send me about 100,000 of your air miles and we'll call it even. Give Ashley all the trinkets.
I think I have some to spare.
Now you're just bragging.
And then Mike, let me know, Mike, whatever you want to bring back, just send me a text and I'll do my very best on there as well. All right?
I like tequila.
I'll see what I can do.
There we go.
There you go.
Bye, John.
You're locked in. John Paul Morosi of MLB Network. You could win. Was that a decent pivot?
Yeah, it was great.
That was good.
I mean, it was until you talked about if it was decent.
Okay.
Like, well, you just got to go sometimes. You just got to take off.
Words of affirmation from my life coach is important to me.
Is that one of your love languages? Words of affirmation?
Well.
Noted.
Yeah, thank you.
Really noted.
I'll never hear words of affirmation from you again.
No, I'm going to torture you.
Yeah, exactly. You could win one of 50 $500 prize packs and qualify for a grand prize sports weekend getaway, including tickets to see both Toronto teams back-to-back with the VTech wake-up call. Give us a call anytime. The line is available to you, 416-413-4141. Leave us your best Toronto sports take and give us a little more than... Hi, I'm John in Milton. Toronto is good, eh? Like, just give us a take, and we may play it. Set your alarms each and every Friday morning at 8:20 for the VTech wake-up call. All of our contest details, you can find them at sportsnet.ca/590. Emily Kaplan, this is like the first time since the NHL regular season started where we're kind of in limbo with the Leafs. They haven't played since Tuesday. They won't play again until Saturday night in Philadelphia. Big night for Leon Draisaitl as the Oilers win in Columbus. And how about the Tampa Bay Lightning? I mean, they get it done 7-6 in New Jersey. We've been freaking out about the Leafs. The Bolts, they've got some of the same issues with some of the same expectations. Emily joins us next.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Psycho killer. Qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa, 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 better.
good news is that the Jake Muzzin injury suffered on that Tom Wilson hit the other night doesn't seem to be serious.
Because that looked bad. When it happened, I thought hip, like leg out of the torso. I've seen it. I mean, Tom Wilson's a big man, right?
Yes.
And he's coming at you, which was a charge.
A lot of steps.
How, I mean,
at
seven.
Least six.
Seven. According to my research.
So how is that not a, I like the fact that he didn't give him a headshot, but it was a charge. And I like the point that, and Tim and Sid yesterday, Tim brought up the fact that if that's an open ice hit, that's a 5-minute major and a suspension probably. But the fact that it's against the boards, there's nothing. And the reason I thought that was interesting, because I would never think of it like that, but it's exactly the same thing. It's a bad Charlie horse. He could have blown out his knee. He's lucky. And why isn't that treated the same as an open ice kind of kneeing penalty? Because let's be honest, Tom Wilson, smart guy. When he goes to hit somebody, he knows how to get you the best way possible. Even with the Barry hit later in the game, he's going after him, trailing his lower body to make sure he grabbed a good chunk of Barry. And you saw him go down in pain. And he knows what he's doing. All these plays that are questionable. And yeah, the hit on Muzzin, it should have been a call. And it's a lot worse than people said it was.
Well, the one thing, you know, Tom Wilson, local guy, he can play a little bit. And he walks that edge. He has often crossed it, but you know he's out there. And that is a huge, huge deal for the Washington Capitals. Emily Kaplan is a reporter for ESPN, and our NHL Insider is brought to you by McAlpine Ford Lincoln in Aurora. Emily, thanks so much for taking some time this morning. I mean, the Leafs dodge a bit of a bullet here with Jake Muzzin. That injury not believed to keep him out of the lineup for long. Situation here in Toronto, of course, is that there's just no cap space, right? I mean, this is a team that will be depth challenged if at any point they deal with attrition.
Yeah, and, you know, they're dealing with it a little bit now with John Tavares being out in their forward corps and, you know, some of their stars underperforming, like Mitch Marner not having the best month. Austin Matthews also not exactly paying up to expectations. But you're right. There's probably a wish list of things that Mike Babcock and Kyle Dubas would like to get for this team. Depth is a big thing. And this is the world that they chose to live in when you pay all those forwards all that money. So we'll see how it goes. I do know that the Atlantic Division is probably a little bit more competitive than we thought. We thought it was going to be the three teams running away with it, the Bruins, the Lightning, and the Maple Leafs. And really only the Bruins are living up to that billing. And you have teams like the Sabres and the Florida Panthers who are looking probably a little bit more competitive than we thought.
Now, with this Leafs team, I always find it interesting to hear perspectives from outside of the city, from people that aren't covering it every single day. What do you think's the biggest issue with the Leafs right now and this young group of kids that just got paid?
That's a great question. Honestly, it's nothing on the ice. I think it's just living up to the outside noise and expectation. That feels like it's weighing on this team. It's a burden for them. You know, we always see teams go in and the way they talk about them. And, you know, Ovi's quote really stuck out to me last week. So, I, you know, maybe he said it to rile people up, but it just feels like there's so much noise around this team and so much expectation. And as of this moment, they're not living up to it. And we're all kind of from the outside assuming that it's going to implode and there's going to be some drama, you know, with a coach and GM and perhaps them just not being able to make it work and get a championship done.
Now, you mentioned the Ovechkin comments. They kind of hit the city by storm. Everyone was talking about it. You had the Mike Babcock talk about it in his post game. You had the players, which I thought responded in the game against Washington. Did you have an issue with what he said, or was that just Alexander Ovechkin being himself and just a candid response?
Yeah, I think that's just Ovi being Ovi, and that's why we love him. Honestly, I'd love to see more of that in the NHL, candid assessments. Like, I saw a quote from Taylor Hall the other day, I think it was from last night, talking about Devils fans and then saying, you know, they're 1-for-3 in the power play and they're getting booed and things like that. So I love when players are that candid, and it honestly reminds me of a little bit more of an NBA attitude, you know, where we're kind of creating narratives, we're creating culture, we're creating topics, and it makes the sport more fun. So I'm all in for it.
Yeah, I really feel, though, is Alex Ovechkin definitely stirring the pot a little bit. He's mischievous, right? And so when he talks about the Leafs having to play for each other and not themselves, and then throws in a Dale Hunter quip, and we know what their relationship was like, I think that he knew exactly what he was doing. But to your point, the Ryan Reeves, the Drew Doughty, even to a certain extent Stamkos calling out his team early in the season, it really does feel like there is a shift in narrative a little bit this year with NHL players and the way they're addressing the media, Emily.
Yeah, no, and I'm all for it. And you're right. It was a little mischievous of Ovechkin, but he knows what he's doing. And, you know, you see him go on that whole Western Canada trip, stumping for John Carlson to get the Norris. And it almost felt like he was being his campaign manager and literally created the campaign himself.
You mean John Norris? Continue with your question.
Yeah,
I did
John
see
Norris,
that.
John Carlson.
Yeah, it was so good.
Yeah.
Okay, we rarely go around the league for a little bit, so I'm going to tie two Western Conference teams into one, and I'm going to ask you about two of their young stars. Who would you rather have on your team if you were going to lock them into a 5 or 6 year deal? Would you rather go Elias Pettersson in Vancouver, or would you rather go Leon Draisaitl in Edmonton?
Oh, that's a tough question. Honestly, I've never compared those two. My instinct is to go Pettersson, just because he's kind of that generational talent that it's kind of hard to define. The way he plays the game is so unique, and he really makes the guys around him better. But if you look at production, the way Draisaitl has produced over the last year plus now is really remarkable, and he's showing no signs of slowing down. So it's like the heart versus the brain, but I'm going to go with Pettersson.
Now, with Draisaitl and the Edmonton Oilers, they're number one in the Western Conference right now, and I don't think anybody saw that coming. We know what they have in McDavid and Draisaitl, but the question around them is their secondary scoring and maybe goaltending. Do you believe this team is for real, or is this just kind of a good start and reality will kick in soon?
It's a great question. You know, it felt like last year they had two forwards they could depend on. This year they can have three forwards they depend on. That's, you know, an upgrade. you mentioned, yeah, goaltending is a concern for me. And the team was in Chicago where I live. It was probably about 3 weeks ago, and they were still undefeated. I remember asking Oscar Klefbom what feels different about the team this year. And he was like, you can't ask me now. Everything is great. We're all in good mood. We're winning. But the one thing that does feel a little different is continuity. I've been with so many GMs and so many coaches already in my young career, and it's been taxing on me. And I finally feel like we might have the right guys in place in Tippett and Ken Holland. So I think there's a little bit of a different vibe with this team, that they're kind of turning the corner and they've got the right management in place. And so it feels like this could be sustainable, but I am concerned about depth scoring. I'm really concerned that goaltending is going to hold up though.
Here's the thing about the Oilers. They've obviously struggled for so long. There was one gleaming hope when they're in the postseason, and then they just absolutely go crashing down the following year. But otherwise, we know that this is really just a pained fan base. Does it even... Listen, I know the players are playing to win the Stanley Cup, but in a sense, does it even matter if this is just a really good regular season team and they make strides and show that they're on the right track? Is that enough for this group this year? Because I know with Connor McDavid, expectations automatically are tenfold higher than they are with any group. But we've seen time and time again that these things take time. And if you want to be a constant in this league, it's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah, you know, and I'm thinking back to my conversation with Klefbom, and that's exactly what he said, is like, we need to be patient with it. And he pointed out to the Kings and the Blackhawks and Penguins and teams that have been successful over the last decade plus. And he's like, the thing there is continuity. And you know, I'm just hoping that management doesn't pull the plug on things when it's not working out. Like, we need a little bit of patience. So I do think that making the playoffs this year would be a step forward for them. And I'm not necessarily expecting a big run, But I do think that we need to see some building blocks. And, you know, I don't think anyone's expecting this team to contend for a Stanley Cup this year. There's still, you know, as we mentioned, some glaring deficiencies and things that need to get done. But just making the playoffs, I think, could do some wonders.
With Emily Kaplan of ESPN, this is Leadoff with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So they're literally even goal differential, 42-4, 42 against, 6-4-2 out of the gate, a road-heavy schedule so far, 8 road games to 4 home games. Tampa Bay is a team, Emily, that plays a similar run-and-gun to the Maple Leafs. I would argue that they have more high-end talent than the Maple Leafs do. They have expectations as well. Is this just an early season thing for them and they'll figure it out? Or do you think, because remember, Steven Stamkos, 3 games into the season, came to Toronto and spoke up publicly up here. All the big, you know, TV station microphones were, Sportsnet's microphones were in his face, got a lot of traction second week of the season. Do you think this is a blip on the radar for Tampa Bay, or is there right reason to be worried?
Honestly, I was thinking about it, and maybe they're learning how to create a more sustainable season, and you don't have to run out of the gate gutting and just beat up on all these teams. And, you know, it's a test of endurance, you know. So I worry about this team falling into the trap of being the new Capitals, the amazing regular season team that dominates all teams and then just can't get it done in the playoffs. And, you know, maybe they're just finding their groove a little bit now and figuring out how they can hit momentum at the right time. So I am concerned because they don't look as dominant as they should, but we know the pieces they have in place. We mentioned depth. Like, they have the depth to be able to do it. They have the goaltending to be able to do it. So I'm not quite concerned right yet.
Emily, thank you so much for your time. We'll catch up again very soon, I hope.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks, guys. Have
Hi,
a good
Emily.
Day.
Thanks, Emily.
Emily Kaplan, hockey reporter for ESPN.
Yeah, baby.
Tampa Bay.
Oh, I was going to say Oscar Klefbom. When he went to Edmonton, he was young and the organization was a disaster. And he's probably sitting there as a newer kid in the league and he's just like, oh, my God, is this what life is actually like here? And so I'm really happy to see that he's feeling more confident because any stable environment is going to lead to better results. And that's just universal across the board. That's work, that's home, that's for kids, that's whatever, right? So when he says things like that, that he feels like there's more continuity and he's someone who's not necessarily that outspoken, but he feels comfortable saying that they feel like they've hit their stride, it's a good sign for Oilers fans.
Well, there's two schools of thought there, right? When you're management trying to develop players and your organization, the culture, there's one way you can do it is you want the young guys to kind of see the struggles of your team and you want to go through that. And there's another school of thought where it's like, I don't want to bring a young guy into maybe an unhealthy environment. But if you're a team that's kind of struggling when these young guys come in, it can do one of two things, right? It can either make this player better or it can really hurt a player's development. I think a guy like that, I think he's learned a lot from what this team's gone through. And now they're on a bit of a roll. I hope what we've seen out of them so far, I hope they're going to build on it. But like Emily said, this is a situation where they're going to have to get goaltending down. They're going to need secondary scoring. They're going to have to be a team that just doesn't fall behind the eight ball in these games where it seems like they're making one or two mistakes and the game's over.
Yeah, and they've overcome a lot of deficits in games early this season. They won by 3 last night, 4-1 over Columbus, and they got a +5 goal differential despite being 9-4-1. I mean, there's Pythagorean stuff that baseball likes to go through. What's your real record based on run differential? The Oilers are not a 9-4-1 team when you look at goal differential right now and just truly how top-heavy they are. So we'll see if there's regression to the mean here.
Well, yeah, I agree with what you said. Their start of their season, they fell behind in their first 4 or 5 games, and you're not going to come back from those all year. It just doesn't happen. You can get away with maybe 3 or 4 in a row, but after that, it's just not sustainable.
We'll get you set for a good show, and I mean, we're in a rush to get out of here. I mean, Mon's got a lunch to get to. It's all ahead.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Lead off with Ashley, Ziggy, and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now I have a story that I'd like to tell about this guy you all know.
a night after I crawl into bed. He's burnt up like a weenie and his name is Fred. He wears the same hat and sweater every single day. And even if it's hot outside, he wears it anyway. He's gone when I'm awake, but he shows up when I'm asleep. I can't believe it.
So you can be sure of one thing. Whatever you do today, it will be less out there. Is that euphemistic? Less out there than what Ryan Mon, our technical producer, is going to be doing. We did Dark Side of the Mon a couple of hours ago. Apparently, he has this annual pilgrimage to a cemetery.
Not
where
apparently.
He,
very much so.
Yeah, he's going.
Go ahead.
He's
it's
gone.
Like pouring rain outside.
So, for those that don't know, and I'm only taking this over because I cut off Scott MacArthur and I don't want to look at him, so I'm going to look at Ryan Mon and just talk to him right now and say every Halloween, technical producer Ryan Mon takes a sub because a pizza would be crazy because it obviously gets cold when you're in a cemetery for an hour, and has lunch in a graveyard by himself because that reminds him of the joy Halloween brought him as a child.
With a mixtape that includes some of the major lines from movies like Silence of the Lambs.
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It does this whenever it's told.
So relaxing.
Oh, God, help me, please! Hello? Ma'am, please help me! Please!
Flashback to my youth.
Can you hear me?
Nothing says fall like a chainsaw. Cutting down trees, raking leaves.
Mon, can you just add one layer to this whole thing today? Can you order something on either like DoorDash or Skip the Dishes or Uber Eats and just like, because there's no fixed address, or just put the cemetery you're at in the drop-off?
I'm at the entrance of just Mount make them, Pleasant.
I bet the cemetery does have an address.
They do.
And yeah, then, and you then, can meet them at the sign.
Can you come on the air tomorrow and tell us how the driver reacted as rain was pelting on him or her and delivered you the food that you ordered?
That's a great idea.
At a cemetery.
Invite them to hang out by a gravestone with you.
That's right. I'll bring a couple beer.
Really, at that point, it would be rude not to.
Mon, try and find a cool body that we can Google their name and like see who they were and see if they have a Wikipedia page. That's what I need you to do today. And I mean, like, cool body is kind of a weird way to put it, so maybe I should be there with you because obviously I'm a psycho too.
And quick shout out to Matt Marstrom, producer, for the Berkey get up yesterday. I loved it.
Oh, the Halloween costume. The Halloween costume.
Oh, incredible.
He should wear it to the cemetery with Mon. J.P. Aaron Sebia, Mike Rupp, Brian Burke, John Hollinger, all guests on Good Show coming up. We are back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Have a nice Thursday.
Good.